Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. I saw Billy Idol play here in New York once. It was over 30 years ago. And I'm not ashamed to admit it, I don't really remember it so well. It was probably around the time where his punk band, Generation X, was dissolving and he was beginning to tour as a solo artist. I know it wasn't at CBGB's, but the rest of that night, kind of a blur. For me, and maybe for him, too. And I say that because, well, you'll see why in a moment. What I do remember is that it wasn't long after that that Billy Idol went on to mammoth pop success with songs like Rebel Yell, White Wedding, and Dancing with Myself. In his new tell-all autobiography, Dancing with Myself, Billy Idol documents his days as a young English punk, the creation of his first band, Generation X, and his emergence as a full-blown pop star. And there's a lot of sex and drugs along with the rock and roll, too. It's an uncensored and intimate account of his journey, and today we have Billy Idol here with us on Soundcheck. Billy, welcome.
Hello there.
So it's not just a book, but there's an album as well, called
yes.
Kings and Queens of the Underground. And I'm wondering, first of all, whether the one affected the other, because listening to the new record, it seems like there's maybe a retrospective quality to it.
There is to some of the songs, in particular, say, Kings and Queens of the Underground, which actually is more or less the story of my career, really. There is elements of that. I mean, yes, the two things did rub off on each other. But at the same time, there's just as much music on the new album that's very much about today. So it's not all reflective on the new record.
Although, you know, having...
The book is. But
if you read the book, you know, where you begin with the motorcycle accident of 1990 and then come back to it later in the book.
Yes.
When you read that and then hear the first song, Bitter Pill, with its talk about... The signs on the road.
And yes, riding down the road, and yes, I ignored all the stop signs that say speed will kill you. Yes, that's right. So there is very much an element. Actually, that song is about 14 years old, so it was one of those songs that actually I waited to really put it out because it seems like now it's very much about, I think it makes sense with the book.
Yeah.
Actually, whereas maybe 14 years ago, my road hadn't been quite so long and maybe hadn't been quite so scattered with impediments or whatever. But it's a lovely song, Bitter Pill. One of my favorites on the record, actually.
The record is called Kings and Queens of the Underground. It's out on October 21st from my guest, Billy Idol.
Riding down this road like I've ridden down a million. Run through every roadblock in this town. I laughed at all the signs that say speed will kill you. It took you to slow me down. I've forgotten how to fly. I'll remember before I die. It's a crooked line.
That's called Bitter Pill. It's the opening salvo from Billy Idol's latest record called Kings and Queens of the Underground. It comes out on October 21st. His new memoir is called Dancing with Myself, and you know, you will hear parallels between some of the stories in the book and the language in this song. Now, you said, Billy, it's a 14-year-old song. When you wrote it, did you have the memoir project in your mind at that point?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. And we actually wasn't we were intending on putting Bitter Pill out a long time ago, but we never made quite the definitive version. I think this is very much the definitive version.
Now, the memoir called Dancing with Myself is pretty brutally frank about all the things that you've gone through. Inevitably, some of the stories come off as darkly comic because you do get yourself into a lot of unusual situations along the way.
Yes.
How, given the kind of depths of some of the addiction problems that you describe in the book, how do you remember all this stuff? Did you keep a diary through everything?
No, I didn't, not at all. No, I mean, of course, we were very much living for the moment in those days, and the last thing you thought was sitting there at night or something cataloging.
Dear diary.
You just weren't even in a fit state to do anything like that. No, I very much relied on my memory, and that's what you're reading in this book is what I really, what I can remember. I mean, obviously, right. If I didn't remember it, I didn't put it in there. Or I mean, other people would tell me stories and things, and I just thought, well, that's their memory.
Right.
If I didn't have that recall, then I would, I'd go, well, okay, cool, but I'm going to stick with what I remember to a certain extent. That's what I could really hold on to. And yeah, I was surprised myself that I could remember enough to make the book interesting, I think, you know.
Well, you remember it like funny little details about your life growing up. I mean, you refer to there's a ton of pop culture here, including TV shows like The Prisoner with
yes.
Patrick McGoohan,
yes.
which is a favorite of mine. Captain Scarlet, which was one of those, you know, kind of puppet shows that were big in the 70s. Things I hadn't thought of in years that kind of just go by.
Yeah, well, it's nice to sort of reminisce about British culture back then, especially. I think it's nice for maybe for the American audience. They,
well, you know, those shows were here, but
well,
they were definitely cult things.
Yeah, I mean, and Doctor Who and things in England was massive, and it was our kind of Star Trek, really, Doctor Who in a way. And but yeah, it was great fun cataloguing some of that growing up experiences with sort of the culture of America. So I grew up in America for a short time when I was about 3 to 6, and so that's very much in the book. And I very much have a cross-pollination of cultures, really, American, English, and my mother is actually Irish, so there's a yeah. touch of the Irish in there as well.
So you're a total mutt.
Yes, very much so, yes.
When you moved back to England as a six-year-old, you write about being a stranger in a strange land.
Yes, I was. I was an American, really. I didn't have any English memories. My memories were of Long Island, Patchogue, Long Island, and the, you know, the Fire Island and the you know, surfing the breakers in the big car tire. A very American. And then mm-hmm. I went, and the American summers being so blistering and the winters being so long and the snow. And then you get back to England and there's, you know, there's not a sort of a blazing summer. It's just this grey. It can be very grey, England. I mean, there was a poetic quality, I thought, though, about going back to England that my dad, because in a way, you know, it's because of the nature of the climate. It's not as cruel or as tough as the New York climate or anything, but there is this pervading grayness. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And in a way, it makes you have to entertain yourself, because there's this, if you don't entertain yourself and give yourself a bit of fun, then, you know, you could really get quite depressed. So I think music was our way of combating even the weather there, you know.
Yeah. So you talk about some of the bands that sort of informed your, you know, musical life, really.
Yes.
Beatles and Stones, which for someone who came of age in the punk scene, was kind of brave to say, no, I actually like the Beatles and Stones.
Well, yeah, I mean, I bought She Loves You when I was six and a half with, it was 7 shillings and threepence halfpenny or 6 shillings and threepence halfpenny or something. I remember I saved up my pocket money. I was very much I really fell in love with music at an early age. I mean, if you can imagine, if I'm buying a Beatles records at, at 6, I used to buy the Beatles, and I had a friend who bought all the Stones, and we would have record playing parties. So we were very much into music. I mean, that's what was so great about the 60s. There was this plethora of music, and music moved through movements really fast. You went from the Merseybeat scene to the London scene to it exploding into the sort of Love and Peace, hard rock blues, the blues explosion, the blues rock explosion with Cream and John Mayall's Blues Breakers, then to Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath. I mean, it was so exciting. And then it was just as exciting when we came in the mid-70s to sort of say, well, what are we going to do? as young people, what are we going to do to kind of... They've the people in the 60s and early, they've done it all.
Right.
What the hell do we do? And I think punk rock was our way of sort of, you know, realigning the sort of playing field and sort of bringing the rules down a little bit, dumbing down maybe the rules a tiny bit, so that it gave people like us a chance, people who weren't such incredible musicians as some of the people in the 60s who were great musicians. We were very much up against it in a way, but I think in a way we came up with something that was very much our own, and that was the fun of it,
right.
Finding something that we could add to culture too, just like we'd sort of enjoyed those groups in the 60s. And I'm sure a lot of other people in punk at some point, they were fans of music. You wouldn't have been in a group
right.
if you didn't love music or something. You know, and even if it's Iggy and David Bowie and the Velvet Underground, I loved those sort of groups. I loved a lot of New York groups. That's why when I did leave Generation X and moved to America, it was very much to come to New York, the mecca of punk. You know?
Right.
Jenny said when she was just 5 years old, there was nothing happening at all. Every time she put on the radio, there was nothing happening at all. Then one fine morning she put on a New York station, she didn't believe what she heard at all. Started dancing to that fine, fine music. You know her life was saved by rock and roll.
We're speaking with Billy Idol, my guest on
mecca
Soundcheck.
Mecca of music, actually. New York, the mecca of music.
Yeah.
So much music has come out of New York. I loved it.
Well, it does seem like your life has been a series of this kind of oscillating in and out of New York, you know, from age 3, when you were in Rockville Center and Patchogue, you know, still close to New York.
Yes.
Back home to New York, out to California, back to New York. And when the punk movement starts, you write in the book about how you and your friends saw rock and roll as an American thing.
Well, yes, it to us it came from America, even though the Beatles had sort of, you know, kept it going very
yeah.
much so. But it's still, yes, even the Beatles talked about it very much being their love of American music. And I think it was the same for us. I mean, we were very much turned on by American punk rock groups. Iggy, the Stooges, New York Dolls, Velvet Underground. We loved New York, we really do. And of course, the scene coming out of CBGB's, the Ramones, Blondie, the Talking Heads. I mean, television. We were very. That's what we were. That's what was turning us on in the mid 70s.
Do you remember your first experience of what would come to be known as punk?
Well, actually, was seeing the Sex Pistols. Really, English punk was seeing the Sex Pistols. I saw them very early on in 1976 when a lot of people, they were some of their first shows, and it was so exciting to see this anarchic, crazy, you know, group that was not obeying any of the stage rules that you were used to. And of course, coming after the sort of hippie period and everything, it was a fist in the face to outdated rock and roll, and it very much, it was what we needed. Because the whole country, England, it was very much in a depression at that time, and the world was. In fact, America was in a depression.
Sure.
But if America's in a depression, it's 100 times worse in England. And people were seriously, I mean, they'd been, the 70s was an age of unrest in England, and its kind of denouement was, you know, punk rock. That was our way of speaking out, and there's a lot of other people who were protesting, and this was our way of protesting.
We're speaking with Billy Idol, the multi-platinum recording artist, famous for hits like Rebel Yell and White Wedding, and of course the song Dancing With Myself, which is the title of his new memoir. And his new album, out on October 21st, is called Kings and Queens of the Underground. He's with us here on Soundcheck today. So at what point after seeing the Sex Pistols do you go spiky, blonde, and sneery and become Billy Idol?
Well, it wasn't too soon. We were very much... fans of the Pistols. We used to go to all their shows, and we became known as the Bromley Contingent. We were given a name by the sounds writer Caroline Coon. She wrote for Sounds magazine in England, and she was actually doing a story about Sex Pistols fans, which included us, and she was actually asking me... I was going by the name Billy IDLE because everybody was having fun and changing their name and everything. Mm-hmm. And then when she came to write this article about the Bromley Contingent and the fans of the Pistols, she asked me, you know, okay, what are you going to be called? And I said, well, I was calling myself Billy IDLE because a chemistry teacher in school had said I was William. He wrote in big capital letters, William is IDLE on a third form report, which I always remember because it was like my dad went crazy. But anyway, this years later, and... she said, well, if you're not, you know, I was going to call myself Billy IDLE, and then I realised, of course, there's Eric Idle from Monty Python's right. his real name. So right. I had 24 hours to make up my mind, and in that 24 hours I went, I can't use IDLE. Oh, my God, IDOL. It's so crazy, and it was just a fun name, really, and it was one hell of a lot of fun. I've had a hell of a lot of fun with it ever since.
Yeah. not the very beginning, there were a couple of false starts before Generation X, but beginning in the public eye with the band Generation X.
Yes.
And you explain in the book where that title comes from.
Yes, actually, my mother had been to some garage sale or something, a jumble sale, we call them in England, which is a garage sale, and she'd found this sociology book and she brought it home. She knew I loved, you know, 60s culture and mm-hmm. Youth culture books and everything, and so she gave it to me. And then years later, when we came to... me and Tony James, we came to actually think up a name for our group. I happened to show him this book, you know, Generation X, and he said, well, that would be a great name for our group. And I went, oh, yeah. And then I happened to ask all my friends. I sort of phoned up my friends and said, you know, we're going to call our group Generation X. And nobody liked it. They all told me it was crap. And I went, you know what? The fact they all think it's crap, it must be good. And that shows you how crazy my mind works, you know. We kept it and we worked under it, and I'm proud of the name.
And in 1978, Generation X recorded this song called Your Generation. I said your generation done me a favor to me. My take a bit of violence, but only violence ain't our best. My make our friends and that's the Generation X song, Your Generation. And that voice, of course, is that of my guest, Billy Idol, who'd go on to a pretty successful solo career on his own. Up next, more with Billy Idol, and later, a live performance from the Norwegian Indian singer Samsaya. That's coming up on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. More now with my guest Billy Idol, who's got a new album called Kings and Queens of the Underground and recently penned a memoir called Dancing with Myself. The book, of course, you know, charts a trajectory that seems to be just up, 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 you know, new heights at each. But at each step, there are new challenges and there are new... to go back to something we talked about earlier, there are new signposts at the side of the road, and you're ignoring all of them, it seems.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you're very much in the flow of things, flow of just coming up with ideas and recording music and going on the road. And but, of course, yeah, I mean, to do a lot of it, we were doing these extensive tours. The Rebel Yell Tour was a 10-month tour. I mean, we crossed America about four times, and we went around the world as well. And... I think you couldn't help but sort of get it to help you to do it. You know, not so much to go on stage or anything, but just to help you just to generally get along with it. You did start kind of overdoing, you know, some drugs and stuff a little bit. Just it's just we were paid in booze in those days, and you know, you can imagine that it's very easy to fall into relying on chemical, powerful substances, powerful chemicals. But it wasn't what was driving us. What was driving us was the love of the music, a love of going on stage, of exploring with Steve Stevens, of finding out what the next music we're going to be coming up with. We're so excited. That's really what we were doing.
And MTV had a role to play. I mean, the video for White Wedding was, for a lot of America, their first chance to see you as well as to hear you.
It really was, in lots of ways. I had been on Solid Gold and television performances, yes, but they really saw me first of all, I think, would have been the White Wedding video. Yes.
Now, did you have any kind of reservations about how White Wedding would be taken once it was sort of sent out to Middle America?
No, I didn't really even think about that. You know, I liked the song. I thought the song was a breakthrough song, and it also kind of was in the style of Dancing With Myself. It kind of kept that style going. I was very much mining that seam, and it was a fun, weird song to do. So I didn't even think about how people were going to take it. I believed in the song.
You know? Right. In the book, you refer to it as almost like a kind of heroin fantasy. Was that in retrospect that you realized that?
The video was
the
maybe
video,
a tiny
the video,
bit,
yeah,
to
yeah.
all the crosses, and it was all a bit dark. And But the song itself is more like about not falling into conventions in society, but it was kind of a fantasy song in a way. My sister had just got married in England, and she was actually pregnant when she went up the altar, which was fine because they were very much in love and everything. But I thought about, well, what about if this was 10 years before, and what about if it was a shotgun wedding, and I just turned the whole thing on its head and just thought, what about if I was the brother who was incensed about it? Maybe there's even some incestuous love thing going. I sort of just came up with a whole dark way of looking at it. It just brought the song alive, and that title, White Wedding, became something a lot more dark, really. So it's fun. I had fun with it, and I think that was the point about it all. We were just having a whale of a time.
The song, of course, is White Wedding from my guest Billy Idol.
Hey, little sister, what have you done? Hey, little sister, who's the only one? Hey, little sister, who's your Superman? Hey, little sister, who's the one you want? Hey, little sister, shotgun. It's a nice day to start again. It's a nice day for a white wedding. It's a nice day to start again. Hey, little sister, who is it you're with? Hey, little sister, what's your spicy wish? Hey, little sister, shotgun, oh yeah. Hey, little sister, who's your Superman? Hey, little sister, shotgun. It's a nice day to start again. It's a nice day for a white wedding. It's a nice day to start again.
One of the massive hits by my guest, Billy Idol. That is White Wedding from 1982. Billy Idol's here with us on Soundcheck. He's got his new memoir called Dancing With Myself and a new album out on the 21st called Kings and Queens of the Underground. You start the book with the motorcycle accident in 1990.
Yes.
Several hundred pages, we come back and we actually get the full story of, you know, your recovery and stuff. And you find yourself lying in a hospital bed, becoming addicted to morphine, and the doctor comes to you and says, is there something you need to tell me?
Yes, he said to me, Mr. Broad, how can I put it? The pain medication, you're drinking it in. And I said, is there anything you want to tell me? And I said, I am a massive drug addict. And he said, the only reason we're not worried about anything else other than can you get off it when the time comes? And I promised the doctor I would, and I did. I mean, I was probably on it for 2 weeks, and then it took me a week or two to. I was in the best place to get off it, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was in a hospital, so that I would be sweating all night long, and the nurse could change me once every hour, and it was a horrible experience coming off morphine in the hospital. But what better place to be? It's just horrible when you've got a broken leg and, ooh, God, you're trapped in that bed sweating and with the chills and feeling like you're a fish with your skeleton trying to get out of your body, because that's the feeling you have, you know.
Well, and, you know, it wasn't just that you broke your leg, you nearly lost your leg.
Yes, I nearly did, that's right. I mean, if I think it had been a few years before, they would have just cut it off, right? They wouldn't even bother trying to save it, but they'd just perfected a number of procedures which made it possible to save my leg. Thank you very much, doctors and God.
Now, this comes out in the music, because the story is that the cyberpunk record is inspired by the muscle stimulator that you had hooked up to your leg to get the muscles to grow and knit back together.
Yes, I had this around the break. I had an electronic device that was stimulating the blood to move around, and it did look like you had some sort of cybernaut, you know, appendage. And Legs McNeil is very famous from the punk movement.
Mm-hmm. A chronicler of the whole punk movement.
Oh, yeah, Kill Your Idols and everything. Yeah. He interviewed me. He called me a cyberpunk, so he sent me down that road.
Uh-huh.
It was a fun road to go down. I know it wasn't necessarily one of my biggest records or anything, but it had a lot of things in it that were very new, and we were exploring a whole new side to things. I mean, for one thing, I ended up being one of the first artists to put my email address on my album, which is now a staple of records. And we also put out the single on a floppy disk, which would be an MP3 today. So we were very much I was very much enjoying this idea of this future, which we all live in, actually, today. It was a lot of fun, and it may not have been. I do get to say in the book, there's a chapter called Mindfire, which is very much about the album. And it says how it was going to be a soundtrack album, and then to the second Lawnmower Man, there was Brett Leonard's Lawnmower Man, who's going to make a sequel. It was going to become a franchise, and he asked us to do the music to it. And it would have been the soundtrack, but then the film company decided they didn't want it to be a franchise and cancelled Brett's version of The Lawnmower Man 2. Mindfire, and of course it left me with Cyberpunk being an album, just a Billy Idol album. It didn't make quite the sense it would have made if it was a soundtrack album. But anyway, that's what's great about this book. I do get to explain some things, yeah, which at the time I couldn't have said anything.
Sort of like Neil Young's electronic record, you know, when he made that electronic album sort of inspired by his son and using a kind of a speech, electronic speech thing to help him communicate.
That's right. He would have been from the Bridge School. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And I know you've performed in Neil Young's annual Bridge concerts.
Four times. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun being involved. And it's a great school. It's a great school.
Yeah.
It really helps.
Well, Billy Idol's kind of shock to the system was this 1993 album called Cyberpunk.
It was a night.
Idol with Shock to the System from his 1993 album Cyberpunk. Billy Idol's here with me on Soundcheck. His new memoir is called Dancing with Myself. The new album is called Kings and Queens of the Underground, out on October 21st. And mark your calendar, January 28th, Billy Idol will be performing here in New York at the Beacon Theater. Back to the book, not long after Cyberpunk comes out, DOD, 1994, you collapse outside a nightclub. How much of that did you have to get from other sources? Because I imagine your memory must be pretty fragmented of that.
No, I do remember. I know it happened because I would wake up looking at the, you know, I'd know it happened because I'd wake up looking at that terrible hospital ceiling, and you know, you'd wake up and go, oh, God, I've done it again. So, it happened a few times, and it gradually just became too much, you know. it was just getting too much. And eventually, at some point, I sort of, you know, there was a bit of a wake-up call. And I actually had children as well. I had young children back then. And eventually you start thinking about, do they really want a dad who's, you know, a little bit messed up? Then and they don't want that. So I don't know, it took me a long time to sort of really clean myself up. I mean, I'm someone who, I think I've got things a little bit under control. You never know if you have, ladies and gentlemen, but one can only try.
Right, right. and so, you know, on for example, the title track of the new album, it seems like, you know, that's kind of the backstory to this song.
Yes, I mean, Kings and Queens Underground, it is very autobiographical. It's a story of my career, really, from the days of punk in the Roxy in 1977 to 1984 with Rebel Yell, being on MTV and being as high as the moon, and then even to today, and enjoying making music, the thing we loved. This is what we really loved. I mean, all the other stuff was just par for the course, but this is what we were about, music. This is what we cared about. This is what we were doing it for. We weren't in groups to take drugs, or we were in groups to make music and have a whale of a time. And it's so exciting to think I can be here today with you.
With a new record in tow.
Playing a new record that I'm really proud of.
Well, the record sounds great, and this is a really lovely kind of ballad called Kings and Queens of the Underground. It's the latest from Billy Idol. And Billy, I know there's so much more we could talk about, but thank you for sharing some of the story with us today.
Thank you, sir.
We were here tonight, and you hear these sounds. We are still kings and queens of the underground. I don't mean to be profound, but if I'm still around, we are still kings and queens of the underground. Oh yeah. '84 and Rebel Yell at the floor. All he said was no more, more. Well, I touched you with my eyes without a face. I was hot in the city. Yes, I thought I was ace. I didn't know them when I was in your front room on MTV, baby. I was high as the moon.
That's the title track from my guest Billy Idol's new album called Kings and Queens of the Underground. You can meet Billy yourself. He's doing a book signing at the Barnes & Noble in Midtown on Fifth Avenue tomorrow at noon. And then on Thursday, Billy Idol will be appearing at the annual CBGB Music and Film Festival. Up next, we get a visit from the singer Samsaya, whose sunny global pop is about to light up your ears. That's coming up right after the break on Soundcheck.
I'm Maddie Garza from Dallas, Texas, and the band I'm most excited about right now is the Arctic Monkeys, just because they're awesome.
Crawling back to you, never thought I'd call and run. You love you, cause I always knew. Maybe I'm too busy being lost to fall for surrounding you. Now I thought it through, crawling back to you. So have you got the goods? Been wondering if your heart's still open. So I wanna know what time it should simmer down and poker up. I'm sorry to interrupt, it's just I'm constantly on the cusp. I've tried been to kiss you, I don't know if you feel the same as I do. But we could be together if you wanted to.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The artist known as Samsaya joins us in the studio today with her bright blend of electronic pop. Her self-titled EP was released earlier this summer, and the artwork is just a picture of a human eye with a heart painted over it. We'll find out why in just a moment, but first, here is Samsaya and her band with the song Jaywalking.
You tell me to stay on the right side of every road. Say I can walk, but they know I got to go. Can't be the one to be blind to all of the things I see. Keep walking on this road, just me, the army.
Very nice. That's Samsaya and her band live on Soundcheck with a song called Jaywalking. Samsaya sings, Tiago Mendez playing bass and keyboards, Pelle Nordli playing guitar and keyboards, Dudu Gonsalves behind our drum kit. Samsaya, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you.
So you're born in India, born in Bombay?
No, I was actually, that's good. That's because of the Bombay calling, you're thinking.
Yeah.
No, I'm
which
from...
Which is one of your songs.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's, no, I was born in Himachal Pradesh, which is north in India. And it's just that my uncle lived in Bombay, and he would always call us. When I was like little, I was 5 years old in Norway, waking up at night and having these weird calls come in, like, because it was my uncle from India calling me, Bombay calling, you know, very like, and I was like, what is going on? And like, so it's a little bit because of that the whole thing,
so
the whole Bombay calling thing.
How old were you when you moved from India?
I was 11 months. So for me, India was always like this, you know, it was like another planet.
Yeah.
It was so exciting. It was unreal. And it was so far away. And I think, you know, you have a longing to something when you know you don't look like what's around you where you are. You kind of get this fantasy about where you actually belong, you know?
Yeah, where people look like me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did feel like an alien sometimes, you know? And I think that's the whole thing with me and the India relation. It became like a thing where I would, when I first time did go to India with my family, I was also a little afraid. Like, I thought the atmosphere there was dangerous, and like the air, because it was so hot. I remember the doors opening when the plane landed, and it was so hot when you breathe in, you could breathe in fire. That's how I felt as a kid. I remember this very vividly. And so some of that is kind of, I'm talking a little bit about that in the song Bombay Calling, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, this song called Jaywalking, what's that little clip at the very end that we heard, that little sample of,
sounds like
a guy from East Africa.
Yeah, because basically that's what I love the most about music. I don't think music has to do with hi-fi. For me, it's always been lo-fi in that sense that I loved it when, maybe it's because riding the bus or just hearing music that's blaring out of speakers where it's like so crisp and like crispy but crackly, you know, and it makes it more alive to me, like everything. And I think in that sense, I like those kind of dents and stuff with life that is more real.
Mm-hmm.
So that is just, that is Kwame in the studio, and he was like jamming on the track. And he was like, I was like, yeah, let's keep this in while we were producing. We gotta keep this line, you know. And just, it makes me feel good. That's why we have it there.
Samsaya's EP is out now. You can find a link to the audio stream on our website, soundcheck.org. There's a full-length record from Samsaya coming out in early 2015. The artwork I mentioned in the introduction, the artwork for the EP is a heart with an eye in the middle of it. And here you are, as you are in your videos as well, with your left eye in the middle of a heart. What's the significance of that?
To me, it's like, First foremost, it's like a ritual I do every time I play live. It's because I think I've been doing music for a long time now, and the second way, when people attract to you, it's like a relationship. They fall in love with you in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But some people have the notion or the idea that they want to change or make you better. You know, just if I chisel you a little bit, you can be a little bit better. And that is so dangerous. And I've been in that situation where I also tried to do that, you know, to others maybe even. So to me, it was like, I think I know very surely that for 4 years ago, I decided, like, I need to focus on why I'm doing music. Why was it, you know, what attracted me to the music? And so the heart was that for me, that I just decided that I will not, listen to what other people need of my music. I will go more into what it was for me as a kid, how it started. And it's always been a very personal relationship with me and my music. So it just became a good ritual that I started doing, and it always reminded me to calm down before I was doing stuff. So I've been doing that.
So this is you calm.
This is me calm. This is me being me. Serene. Don't you feel it? Isn't it a little yoga? Couldn't this be a class of calmness? Yeah.
So growing up as an Indian girl in Norway, it sounds like you were probably listening to a lot of American music.
I was doing that.
And when you started writing your own songs, did they come out in English just
kind of
naturally?
Yeah, they did. Because I would have, I remember Public Enemy, and I would have tapes. I didn't get to go to the youth center. My mother wouldn't let me because she didn't see it to be educational enough. And she knew I just wanted to hang out with the older guys anyway and the people that were there. But So I made my own little youth center in my room with my music, and I had all my tapes and stuff, and I loved Public Enemy. At that time, I was very angry with my parents, so I wanted to do, I guess, everything that they did not like, and I was like, yeah, don't believe the hype, and I would be like in my bedroom making that. And every time there was like a free space and or instrumental, I would be rapping on top of that. That's how it started for me. So, yeah.
All right. Now, the song you're going to play for us next must play into that as well, the song Stereotype.
Absolutely.
You know? Not buying into the stereotypes, what it maybe means to be a woman, an Indian in Scandinavia, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think we constantly, one thing is other people putting you in a box, but the dangerous thing that happens is by time you start doing it yourself. And you're going, I did that also as a teenager. I would start saying, I'm Indian. And people would be like, I just wonder where you're from in Oslo. And you'd be like, yeah, right. You know, and that's kind of scary. So it's an anthem for us to remember that, you know, we shouldn't be down with that. And honestly, I like so many different things. Why should I have to categorize anything? You know, why can't I just enjoy it? And that be a good enough reason to continue doing it?
Sounds good to me. You want to sing the song for us?
Yeah.
We're speaking with Samsaya. Her band is here in our soundcheck studio. Once again, this song is called Stereotype.
On my score, red line is stopping me. We just wanna get away. Speed bumper or deal, me, I'm at a Camille. Poking up a traffic jam, let them know who I am. I'm a stereo, when you're a deal, buy a stereo, I'll make it let go. I'm a stereo, when you're a deal, buy a stereo, I'll make it let go. Oh.
The song is called Stereotype from Samsaya, the Indian-born, Norwegian-raised singer here in our New York studio with her band, with Pelle Nordli playing keyboards and guitar, Tiago Mendes on bass and keyboards, Dudu Gonzalez behind the drum kit, backing vocals all around. Let me just ask, the name Samsaya, that's Hindi, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it probably means something.
Yes, it does.
What?
Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Okay, since I was very little, I've never really believed in absolute truths. You know, when somebody comes and tells you this is how it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I always go, why? So I think that's how it all kind of started with that name. Though I didn't know that in the beginning because my parents gave me a name called Sampada. That's
uh-huh.
my birth name. And it means inner joy.
Okay.
So they were very happy with that.
That's a very nice name.
That's a beautiful name. And I'm a happy person, so I see that, you know, it's a good name. But for me, you know, that time I was telling you about when I was really angry with them and stuff, I wanted something that I could define myself as, and I didn't like other people to decide who I was supposed to be. So I went around calling myself Sam. You know, that's Sam.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was doing my little raps and writing stuff and in my room there. And then I started singing more and not just rapping. And that's where I added Saya, which means shadow, actually. So it's Sam's shadow. That's what I thought it meant. And then later, maybe a couple of years after that, I found out when I was around 20, I found out that it means, the name actually means, in old Hindi, it means doubt.
So you didn't know that?
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. But this Indian guru told me, he was like, because he knew me from when I was younger, and he said, it's so interesting that you have found this name, like searched to it, or it had found you, because you would always be the most annoying one when you were little. You'd always be like, why do our gods have all those hands? What's the point with that? You know, like, and the, you know. So I was always curious about things, and I would always, like, you know, want to, I don't, again, I don't really believe in those absolute truths. I believe in seeing people with your heart, not all, you know, like, our vision is, it's, mm-hmm. I've read this, that our vision is actually like a transmission that your brain is telling you what you see, right? But I'm trying to focus on, like, I met a doctor for a while back, and I was telling him, why can't we just operate people to see people with the heart? I kind of have a feeling. I know maybe it sounds a little naive and stupid or whatever, but it's just, to me, it makes more sense. If we would just see each other with our hearts, we would have a chance to see people for who they are, not for what we have read about them and have to judge them from those, you know, preconceptions.
Yeah, yeah. Now, people who look up you and read about you will see your Wikipedia page says you were an actress as well as a singer. Is that right?
Yeah, that's music to me is my first love. It's everything I breathe and want to be doing, and I can't see myself not doing it. Music, film, however, was an affair. It was just a dirty
fling,
affair. It was a fling. You know, because if it makes you feel good, I think sometimes in life, not too many times, but, you know, that's how it was. It was like that. It came because I thought I was going to a musical audition, and then I got straight into a movie scene where they were like, action, and it was a scene where I'd been unfaithful or something, and I was playing against someone, and I got so afraid that I started crying because I was nervous about the situation. I thought I was going to be singing. Well, one thing led to the other, and I got that role, and then I got another role, but it was a great
way to... So you cried your way into
the job. I cried my way into the business. So actually, you know, I got a couple of roles, and they paid for my first album. So in that sense, it was a beautiful affair.
Very nice.
Highly recommended.
Okay. So where are you living these days?
Right now, I'm in Stockholm.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep going back to Oslo because of these guys. I can't live without them. So
what is the language spoken in the band? Is it Norwegian or English?
Wow, it's pretty... See, we're doing some Portuguese now because of Thiago from Brazil.
Yeah.
And we do some French occasionally because of Dudu over there. But predominantly we're doing, of course, Norwegian. Okay, no, I'm lying. It's English. Like, Pele was looking at me. We should be doing Norwegian because it was mostly
English that was happening in while we were setting up and stuff.
We should talk more Norwegian to Thiago because, yeah, we should work on that.
Well, he's certainly not going to learn Norwegian listening to the music because it's all in English.
That is true.
We've been speaking with Sam Saya and listening to her band. You have a song to wrap up with?
Of course I do. I thought you'd never ask.
This one is called Good with the Bad. Once again, it is music from Sam Saya and her band performing here in the Soundcheck studio today.
Monday morning, I really need to think it straight. I'm done being stressed about Cause I know when you're up, you don't look down. And when you're down, you wanna come around.
That's the song Good with the Bad by my guest Samsaya. Tomorrow on Soundcheck, Jamaican novelist Marlon James's latest book is called A Brief History of Seven Killings, and it's inspired by a real-life assassination attempt on Bob Marley, the reggae legend, in 1976. We'll talk with the writer about what actually happened and about the music that surrounds his story. Plus, singer-songwriter Ahmed Jalab has had a busy year. He directed a musical tribute to the Nigerian synth-funk musician William Onyebor, and he released a new album with his band, Sincane. The album's called Mean Love, and we'll get to hear some of it live in our studio. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.